This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
In the news this month, the story of massive star formation, methane plumes on Mars, and ancient lunar oscillations. There is a great variety in the sizes of stars that we observe in our galaxy. Some are as massive as 120 times the mass of our own Sun, but the question of how such massive stars form has puzzled astronomers for many years. As a gas cloud collapses, a protostar forms in the centre, getting brighter and hotter as it accretes more material and grows. Current models suggest that for stars with masses greater than 20 times that of the Sun, the amount of light produced creates so much radiation pressure on the surrounding gas cloud that it overcomes the gravity of the young star and blows away the gas, preventing further accretion and halting the growth of the star. Computer simulations of stars forming in just two dimensions suggest that the strong radiation completely stops the accretion process when a star reaches about 40 solar masses, still well below the sizes of the most massive stars observed in the sky. But new research published in Science Express during January has found that these massive stars can form despite this strong radiation. A team led by Mark Krumholtz at the University of California at Santa Cruz has carried out sophisticated simulations of star formation in three dimensions, which show that not only is massive star formation possible without the young star blowing away the surrounding gas cloud, but that the process naturally leads to the formation of binary or multiple star systems. When they ran the simulation at the San Diego Supercomputer Center, a project which required many months of computing time, the group found that as the gas cloud collapsed onto the growing protostellar core, instabilities developed in the gas, creating some channels where radiation blew out through the cloud and others where the gas continued to fall onto the star. Rotation of the gas cloud creates a disk of material around the protostar. Instabilities caused this disk to form clumps, which led to several other protostars being created, accidentally explaining why so many massive stars exist in multiple systems. Also reported in Science Express during January was a study of methane gas in the atmosphere of Mars. More than 95% of the planet's atmosphere is composed of carbon dioxide, together with much smaller amounts of nitrogen, carbon monoxide, oxygen, water vapour, and argon. Other chemicals are present in the Martian atmosphere in very small quantities, including the molecule methane. A group of researchers led by Michael Mummer at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Centre used the IRTF and Keck telescopes on Hawaii to take spectra of Mars over a 7-year period, searching for signatures of methane to investigate variations both across the planet's surface and with the seasons. What they found were concentrations of the gas over certain parts of the planet's surface, including plumes over parts of the Syrtis Major region, which varied with changes in the seasons. Methane in both our atmosphere and that of Mars is destroyed by sunlight, so the presence of significant amounts of this gas suggests that there is an ongoing production mechanism. The largest plume detected in this study contained almost 19,000 metric tons of methane, which, according to Mummer, requires a release rate of more than half a kilogram per second, comparable to releases from fissures in the seafloor at Coal Oil Point in the Santa Barbara Channel here on Earth. The mechanism of methane production on Mars, however, is not yet known. Suggestions include many processes already studied on the Earth, including various geological and biological mechanisms. On Earth, methane is produced in magma during volcanic activity, and also in a process known as serpentinization, where the mineral olivine reacts with water at low temperatures to produce the mineral serpentine and the gas methane. It is also possible that the plumes of methane might be caused by microbes deep below the Martian surface under the permafrost layer. As yet, it is not known whether geological or biological processes are responsible for the seasonal plumes, but a future Mars probe carrying a mass spectrometer could narrow down the options, since organic and inorganic processes result in different proportions of the carbon-12 and carbon-14 isotopes. The Moon always shows the same face to us on Earth, due to it being synchronously locked, meaning that it rotates once on its axis in the same time it takes to orbit the Earth. This is partly due to the Moon's irregular gravitational field, and the tides in its surface caused by the pull of the Earth. Over a few thousand years, the Moon slowly reached a position which minimized the potential and kinetic energy, reaching a stable orbit. But in a report published in the journal Icarus during January, researchers present evidence that suggests that the Moon could have once faced the other way, showing its other face to the Earth. Evidence for this idea comes from a study of the ages of impact craters on the lunar surface by researchers at the Institut de Physique du Globe de Paris in France. Just as the front windscreen of a moving car collects more snowflakes than the rear window, there should be more impacts on the leading edge of the Moon than on the trailing side, and so there should also be more craters. Using the known population of near-Earth objects, the cratering rate is expected to be about 29% greater on the leading western edge, also known as the apex of motion, than that on the trailing eastern edge, or antapex of motion. What the study found was that the younger craters in their sample were mostly on the western hemisphere, close to the apex of motion, as would be expected for the Moon's current orientation. The older impact basins, however, were more likely to occur on the eastern hemisphere, close to the antapex of motion. This uneven distribution implies that the Moon did indeed undergo a change in orientation more than 3.8 billion years ago. To alter the Moon's orientation takes a major impact, and a number of likely impact features have been identified, although the authors point out that improved topographic maps of both the near and far sides of the Moon, as well as new data on the Moon's gravitational field from existing and planned lunar probes, will help to more accurately determine the sizes of many impact basins and hopefully support their ideas. And finally, the International Year of Astronomy got off to a good start with an official launch ceremony at the UNESCO headquarters in Paris on the 15th of January. Astronomers from around the world came together with students, astronauts, artists and politicians to celebrate the start of a year of events, hoping to put astronomy prominently in the public eye. 2009 celebrates 400 years since Galileo first turned a telescope to the sky and observed the Moon and the planets. But in West Sussex in England, the start of a year of celebration was marked by recognition of a little-known English astronomer. Thomas Harriot was a contemporary of Galileo, and according to papers at the West Sussex Record Office, he used the telescope to observe and map the Moon before Galileo. Harriot's maps, which are more detailed than Galileo's, are dated 26th of July, 1609, just 5 months before Galileo made his own observations in December of the same year.